Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Chance Craven, founder of Honor Supply Company, well-known photographer in the South and North Carolina region, along with many other states that conduct firefighter conferences and lectures, Christian, father, and husband. What you might not know is that Chance was once a career firefighter back in 2017. If you want to know more about Chance, Honor Supply Company, and the meaning behind his photographs, I implore you to go and listen to Jeremy Donch's National Fire Radio, episode 326. Although Chance isn't a firefighter per se on the books, he's still able to go out and ride trucks, visit stations, talk to the men and women of the fire service, and capture the images we have all learned to love. With that, I present Mr. Chance Craven.
My name is Chance Craven. I'm with Honor Supply Co., residing in Greenville, South Carolina, a believer in Jesus, a husband, a father, and a former firefighter.
All right. Appreciate you coming on, Chance. I know you're a very busy guy who's it's like me having to play Where's Waldo, because I don't you're just everywhere when it comes to conferences, fire events. So it's awesome to see. What you're doing is great. I won't have you repeat the same answers that you were very fortunate. You had an awesome interview with Jeremy from National Fire Radio. So this episode would be a little bit different from that. Everybody knows what you do. Everybody should know about Honor Supply Co. So my first question to you is, how'd you get into the fire service?
Absolutely. First, thank you for having me on. Super honored. You have had a bunch of legends on before me. I actually just finished listening to the podcast with Flag this morning. That was a great one. Shout out Flag. Got to document him down at One Bad Tour, which was fun, and see him embrace that suck. So the fire service, how I got involved in it. Man, I've always been intrigued by the fire service. It is something that my grandparents' house was directly across the street from a fire station in Orange Park, Florida, and grew up kind of interested by it, never got into it. And then through a natural disaster, met the fire chief of the Irmo Fire Department here in South Carolina. He kind of challenged me to pursue that dream and those goals. Came home and talked to my wife about it, who at the time we had a 10-month-old son, had just moved back to South Carolina. And thought she would tell me not to do it. She's like, well, why not? Like, just get after it. And so Chief Sonnefeld sponsored me to go to the fire academy, not to work for Irmo, but just to help me get into the fire service. Got my certifications, started applying to different departments here in the upstate of South Carolina, and eventually got hired at the city of Spartanburg. And that was my entry into the fire service at 30-something years old, 32.
Okay. 32 years old, jumping into the fire service. I guess no, yes, because you haven't said it, but no previous volunteer experience, nothing. It was going to get your certifications and jumping right on in.
Yep. So I have done disaster relief. So I've been in situations with fire service members before, firefighters working alongside of them. Was fortunate enough to start volunteering in Texas at a small department called Haslett before moving back to South Carolina. And there it was something that Texas volunteer fire service to me is pretty unique. It's kind of special. You have to earn your spot there. Great introduction. But then we had a son and we were in Texas by ourselves. And so my wife and I made a decision to come back, and moving back to South Carolina, didn't really have a desire to volunteer anywhere. And missed it. And that's where meeting Chief Sonnefeld, he's kind of like, well, you can still, like, it's not too late to make this a career.
Okay. All right. So let's, we'll fast forward just a little bit. So you get your assignment. What was your assignment when you got to the city of Spartanburg?
Yep. So I was at Station 3 on an engine and working on B shift, best shift. And, It was rookie firefighters. City of Spartanburg, I believe, has one of the best fire departments in the country right now. They have incredible guys, which is what makes it the best. And I had the fortunate opportunity to be a firefighter. I had a good lieutenant, good engineer. Most days we rode three on an apparatus. Occasionally we'd ride four, and was able to jump right into learning. And all three shifts, I was very fortunate that A shift would stay after and teach me things, answer questions if I had anything. Pass off was always thorough. Coming off a shift, C shift always invited me to come do anything that they were doing in the morning to learn more stuff. So really just had the fortunate opportunity to kind of be a student of the game and soak things up and learn as much as possible.
Okay. What you just said there is like a rarity, having all three shifts all dialed in. You don't, at least for me, I personally don't always hear, like, when you get off shift, hey, if there's something you want to do, come ask us if you have any questions. It's usually your shift kind of takes care of that. But when to have other shifts, either coming off or coming on, extend that olive branch to try to get you better, that says a lot.
And that was something that, truthfully, in the moment, I didn't realize how rare it was. Now, traveling around the country, working with different fire departments, fire conferences, to your point, it is not the normal. And for me, it was so beneficial in that C shift, I had an officer, a driver, and a firefighter who all had more experience than me. And it wasn't just table talk. It was, hey, we're going to go stretch these courtyard lays against tight fences and stairwells first thing this morning. If you want to come with us, like, you can. And so even though the department didn't necessarily pay for me to stay later, it was that olive branch of like, hey, we're going to do this right now. Instead of just telling you about it, you can come with us. And it was incredible to have that kind of experience where today that engineer who was a driver in 2018 is now the training chief of the city of Spartanburg. And the guys on A shift have all promoted to officer positions higher up and stuff like that. And so it's awesome for me because it wasn't just this moment, even though now all of those incredible human beings are not the same shift anymore. They've all advanced and they're making what I think is considerable leaps and gains in the culture of the fire service at the city of Spartanburg.
Awesome. Okay. Now with you being able to go around doing photography, videography, capturing all the moments, is it disappointing when you run into or you hear the same notion of, hey, my crew doesn't do this, my captain doesn't do this, my chief doesn't do this, my organization doesn't do this? Like, it's a trend. It's a terrible trend. I don't know what we could do to change it. I think there are little things that are starting to happen. As Chief Rode says, the revolutionaries, you know,
yep,
coming into the fire service now. But do you feel a certain way about that? Like, when you always got to ask yourself, like, I wonder why. That's always the question, like, why?
Yep. So I think that disappointing, yes. Surprised, no. And so I think if you really go all the way back through history, Benjamin Franklin starting the first fire company in the United States in 1736, we've always had bums. We've always had politics. We've always had differences of opinions. And so I think being very fortunate that I did have three shifts in the same house that all worked together, I got to see the very best of the fire service. And then being terminated from the city of Spartanburg for politics, I also got to see the very worst. And so I had this perspective of, hey, man, I hear you. You're one of three or four people in a station. And you're the only one that works out. That shouldn't stop you from working out. Hey, I hear you. You're in a department that they're trying to go clean cab and there's politics and it's going to take seconds away from you being able to respond. Either leave that department and stop complaining about it, or find out what you have to do with what you have to make the very best of it. And so it's one of those things that we kind of joke at Honor Supply Co. that one of our core values is negative Nancy isn't invited. And I think there's a great opportunity always in the fire service, but especially right now, to quickly identify problems And there are these issues that you share and you bring up where it's like, hey, man, I want to go to trainings, but my department doesn't allow us to take our gear anywhere in the country and train. So how do I attend any of these? Now, that's a great question. More and more people and training companies now are starting to get into agreements with gear manufacturers. It's where you can actually go to Carolina Fire Days, get in a set of gear and train, even if your department is not allowing you to take your gear. So, like, there are all these issues, but there are several people right now that are coming up with creative solutions. And so, all that verbal vomit to say, it is discouraging to hear some of the negativity, but I'm not going to sit and dwell on that. Like, I think it is something where there's so much good happening right now. And with the power of social media and all of us being connected, we can quickly point someone in the direction of, hey, you need this type of training, this skill set, this experience. It's there. Okay. Now that you understand there's a solution, are we going to keep this excuse as an anchor, or are we going to pull up anchor and set sail and accomplish something? So it is discouraging, but I don't think it's the end all be all of, hey, we can't do things.
Yeah, I have to agree, but it's like we still have, I don't know what the percentage would be, but we still have, in my opinion, a good number of people that are holding on to that anchor when they don't have to be. Like, yes, there's politics everywhere, there's little cliques everywhere, whatever you want to call it. But if we can learn to control what we can control, I think your shift would go better. I think your life in the fire service would be better. I mean, if it's to the point where it's that detrimental, as you said, find somewhere else to go. Like, I never understood how we could have negative Nancys, who are company officers, for example, that complain, bitch, and gripe, and they just continue to come into work every day, which leads to your crew just probably not caring. So, I mean, I love how you stated it. I just don't understand why, though, if it's that bad, just leave. But they don't leave, they stay.
And that's where I think we're all guilty of kind of that comfort blanket of, man, once you get used to the guys you work with, once you get used to your first dude, once you get used to your house, even if you swap and you go other places every now and then to other departments, like there is a level of comfortability that to change, to leave, to do anything is going to cause a little bit of friction and rub. And I think there are a lot of people that they want change. They know there's better out there, but there is that fear of, man, I'm a year in this or 10 years, I'm gonna have to start over and go be a rookie again. I'm gonna have to walk into a firehouse that I've never been in with coffee and donuts and apples on my first day. And man, it's been 10 years since I've done that. And so I don't want to discredit the hurdle of leaving because I don't think it's that easy.
Right.
Here in the upstate, the way that South Carolina's retirement is, there's guys that are like, man, I'd like to go somewhere else, but my retirement's tied up in this system and I don't know how it transfers to this system. And so there's a lot of unknowns of just picking up anchor and changing direction, so to say. And I respect that and I get it. To your point, though, it's like, hey, man, we're 3 months into you complaining about the same issue. Do you want me to listen? Because I'm done listening to the BS. Or do you want to sit down at the table, grab a cup of coffee, and let's try to solve this? And I think that's where we have to, and this relates to every area in life, I believe, not just the fire service, but if we're all meant to be here to encourage each other, help each other, improve each other's lives, at some point, the Chance and Danny, if we just sat here all day and bashed everyone, man, that show has to end. And we have to sit here and be like, okay, I'm tired of this. You're tired of this. What do we do? And again, both my experience in the fire service and now doing what I do today, the amount of problem solvers, successful people, yourself included, because I've seen you at trainings, I've taken your photo. Like, I don't know the percentages either, but from my perspective, the tide is changing. And you're getting more and more people that are like, hey, I hear you, but we're going to solve a problem. Hey, I hear you, but nothing we do is going to solve that problem. So we're going to focus on what we can't control. And the narrative in the fire service, I think, is becoming less about, hey, Chiefs control everything. And I have all due respect for the chain of command. Chiefs, this isn't like a blast against old heads or the OGs, but it's just like the idea that because I said so and I wear bugles or brass, that's how everything's going to be. That's what's shifting. That's what's changing. And so now I work with multiple departments that, man, the politics of, hey, you can't sit on the front bumper at your station anymore. You know what? I don't agree with that. And we want to make a fool out of you and go blast you. But if that's your rule, we can't control it. So we're going to sit on the table in the back of the bay. We're going to hang out in the back of the fire station. Like there's always going to be those political, bureaucratic things. But there's more and more people, and this is where I get really excited, that are like, okay, cool. Like that's not going to sink us. So we're going to meet up after shift and work out. We're going to hang out at the pub or the bar or Olive Garden, like wherever, off shift. Like more and more people, and I'm seeing it firsthand, are saying, okay, that's a cool problem. Don't agree with it, but it's not going to stop me from being the very best firefighter that I can be. And that's what's exciting for me.
No, that's awesome. And to your point, you mentioned it and it clicked in my head. I think it was maybe a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Raleigh Fire Department did a post and it said, "Hey, attention citizens, as the weather changes and it's getting warmer, you might see your firefighters out front sitting out in front of their station in the bay." Like, I saw that and I was like, they get it. Their
Yep.
chief got the message and was like, cool, because I'm assuming the chief might have to sign off on certain posts. But either way, that was the first time I saw a big municipality career fire department go, hey, just in case you see firemen sitting out in front of their bay, like that's definitely a move in the right direction.
And that is where, like, I will use Raleigh as an example because having my side job is websites and marketing and business and stuff like that. So I actually built Raleigh's Locals website. And so I work with Raleigh a good bit. If you go back 18 to 24 months in their narrative, they would not have been able allowed to post that. And they were actually told they could not sit on the front bumper of apparatus. And so now you have this timeline whenever I talk about all of us being connected, handling things in a proper way, focusing on what you can focus on. There was a clear moment in that department's history where it was like you had leadership saying one thing and firefighters wanting to do another. And there is no perfect department. That's a fallacy. Like everyone has their own issues and the grass isn't always greener on the other side. But at Raleigh, you have a bunch of guys right now that are, for lack of better terms, playing chess, not checkers. And so it's like, hey, okay, I hear you. I see you. What else can we work on? And instead of losing their mind and making short-sighted decisions in that moment, whenever they got that original news, they kept playing the game. They kept moving pawns. They kept doing different things. And now, from a forward-facing public standpoint, they're sharing that, hey, firefighters are going to be sitting on bumpers of apparatus now that the weather's changing. And so that's a very micro example. But a great example of, man, tides changing. Like good firefighters are doing the right things, having the right conversations, not just pulling the pin on a grenade, blowing stuff up and causing collateral damage,
Right.
but saying, okay, I hear you. You hear me. Can we talk about this? Like, can we discuss this? And there are certain situations where that's not happening. But going back to the speeches at FDIC this year and, having the right people infiltrate the right organizations can change a lot of things. So.
No, you're absolutely right, and there, of course, there's a, it has to be done tactfully. You can't, like you said, pull a grenade, throw it in the room, see what happens. That never ends well. But no, you're 100% right, and I think if we were as firefighters, if to me, it's all give and take. You can't, like, I would expect, like, if I was the fire chief of Raleigh, which I'm not, but if I was, I would go, okay, what are my members doing for the area? They show up to work, they train, they run calls, they keep the apparatus up, they keep housekeeping up, things like that. Like, so there's give and take. But if you are a firefighter who your station looks like crap, your trucks look like crap, you don't train, or if you do train, it's done poorly, it's not executed well. As the chief, I'd look at you and go, well, where's my take? Like, you're asking for this, but I'm not receiving anything in return. There's give and take in
Yep.
situations like that.
And that's, yeah, I mean, you nailed it. And it's me having been married for 12 years, like it all comes down to communication. And whether that's in our personal homes, our firehouses, our jobs, I think if any of us kind of struggle with one thing, it's often talking to be heard and listening to respond versus listening to learn. And that's where we'll sit down and, well, man, I'm going to have a conversation with Danny so that I can prove my point to him and get him on my side. And what you just explained is the complete opposite of that. It's, hey, let's sit down and you're going to teach me something. I'm going to teach you something. Both of our opinions may not change, but at the end of the day, we're going to have a different perspective than whenever the conversation started. And I'll understand why you think sitting on the front bumper is valuable. And you may see my perspective on it of why it's not so valuable or why it does cause damage. And there's so many elements that I think all of us don't always consider or know about either. And that's where, as I start to work with different departments and even training organizations, there's a lot of things that as firefighters, we can get tunnel vision, or a firefighter can get tunnel vision. And, man, I didn't consider that, or I didn't think about that. And from even a photography standpoint, I have a lot of great photos of trainings where guys are doing saw work on live fire structures and they're not clipped in. And so they're on a roof, they're running a saw, they have their mask on, everything's on, except for they're not clipped in. And to the firefighter, that's not a big deal because in their mind, they're saving 1 to 5 minutes of air before they need it. They're not doing anything wrong. But from the chief's perspective or the training company's perspective, it's like, man, we can't condone guys on a roof above live fire not clipped in. So how about we never share that? And the firefighter may get, well, it's a cool photo. I want it. Like, give it to me. Well, hold on, let me explain it to you from the other side. And the same thing goes with ride-alongs. It's, hey guys, we can all sit around a table and smoke cigars in the back of the bay. Cool. We allow that, but is that the narrative that we want to share with the public? Probably not. And so we're not going to share those photos. And so your analogy of give and take is spot on. Like, I think we have to have that give a little here, take a little here, back and forth.
No, absolutely. I mean, to me, it's paramount. Like, you can't be a slacker and expect to be given the world. You have to put in, like, that's just the work ethic. You have to put in the work to receive the reward. So that's just me. But anywho's, so if I can ask, how was your first couple months transitioning into Spartanburg, seeing calls? I'm not sure if you were on any what we would call bad calls, you able to see the camaraderie, the brotherhood, things like that.
Yep. So, again, extremely fortunate. My first week at the city of Spartanburg was Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and had a firefighter by the name of Steo just immediately take me underneath his wing, be like, hey man, there's no stupid question. Been in this for a little while. Like, anything you want to know, just ask. And that was extremely beneficial. Again, now realizing how unique and rare that possibly is in most departments, where it's, there was no hazing, there was no jokes, there was no making me feel bad. There was a legitimate, hey man, we're here for you. We want to see you succeed. And so the first week was awesome. I actually got to run a structure fire my very first day and throw ladders on a house. And the only thing I was told was don't hit the power lines, otherwise ladder this home. And so got to jump right into it. It was extremely fun. Once I got my assignment to Engine 63, they respond to almost every fire call in the city. We run a lot of mutual aid with other people. So got to run a few calls. There was never a crazy call in my short 18 months in the fire department, but it was a job. It was fun. The guys made it amazing. Spartanburg is actually very unique in the fact that they still focus on firefighting. We run no medical calls. And so everything I got to run was MVAs and fires and stuff that was legitimately like, hey, this is the best of the best. I love this. And then the guys that were there, we had a couple of leadership changes throughout my time there. And even getting a new lieutenant and stuff like that, it was, man, I had the best experience as a firefighter. Zero complaints, got to work with great people in a city that even at the time was growing very rapidly, and a community that for the most part supported their firefighters. Like it was awesome.
Hey, love it. Very many people don't get to have that experience, you know. You would like for new members to come in to be put with a good crew that runs calls, but sadly, doesn't always happen. You might get an officer that's, if you ask the department, hey, how's this person? They're like,
Yeah.
ugh. Sorry, you gotta buy your time and probably put a transfer in. Or you're assigned a motive an unmotivated crew, or sometimes you're put at a slow station. To me, slow stations, it is what it is. You can't control that in a way.
Yep.
Like there are geographically, there are places around the country where a fire station has to be put, and they just might not run the amount of calls as you would like. I totally get it. I'm at one of those stations. But
Yep.
I can say earlier in my career, I was at our busiest station for 6 straight years. I loved it. But after a while, I was like, all right, I need a new change of pace, something different. And I'm totally fine with it. But it's great that you had that.
And that's where, again, I never realized how fortunate I was until I got out of it, where now I'm meeting people that have been at stations and departments for 5 and 10 years. And they've never been like granted the permission to go to a training. And here I was as a rookie firefighter being sent to Panama City and doing HROC and doing these different classes. And it's like, oh, this is the standard. This is what everybody does. And it's like, actually, it's not. But then on the other side of that, I have now met those guys that they are assigned to the slowest house. They have been somewhere 2 or 3 years and they're, quote, stuck with guys that they just rather not be with. But because they have the right mindset and a little bit of maturity, they're like, hey, I can't control that. And so I'm still going to show up with my prep meals and my rice and chicken, and I'm going to work out. And even if it's something as simple as jumping on Target Solutions and learning things online, like these are the people that are still getting it done. And again, not to keep bragging about the guys I worked with, but even at the time that Brad Bennett was an engineer and a driver, I would never come in on a shift and not have an email from him about a call that happened that week, a training point, a learning topic, where he was not the training chief, but he still took the initiative to be like, hey, even though I'm not assigned this position, I am passionate about this. I'm learning these things. I'm reading about it already. So I'm going to take the initiative to share this with the guys that want it. And so we all have that opportunity and really responsibility to accept our conditions, unless it's something where you're being abused, physically hurt. Like there are certain things that you don't tolerate. And then I call them closed fist issues. Like, hey, this is a safety concern, not going to allow this to happen. But that's 10% of the things we deal with. The other 90 are things that we have preferences on. Hey man, I really don't like that you slurp every time that you drink your coffee. Like I'm about to lose my mind. Man, we're not going to fight over that. So it is that what can I do to make the situation the best that it is and then move forward from there. And luckily I was surrounded with guys that did a really good example of that.
Okay. We'll move a little bit more forward. You mentioned earlier you were terminated from Spartanburg. I'm not sure how much into detail you want to go on it, but I'm sure with you saying that, people's ears are like, oh, what?
Yep.
That don't know, you're like, well, what happened? So.
So, to make a somewhat long story short, and coming off the just saying like you have closed fist issues and open-handed issues, At the time, a former fire chief, city council had approved a new hazmat engine. City of Spartanburg has five stations. It was approved and going to another station. The chief made a unanimous decision by himself that that new engine would come to our house. At the time, our house had the oldest engine, and so it wasn't anything about losing something that was grandiose or anything like that. Most days our air conditioner didn't work, but this new engine was much bigger than the engine that we were currently riding on, to the point that it was a safety concern for our first due. The guys that worked there on all shifts knew that, hey, there's a good possibility that this is not going to fit, especially at night when people are parking on streets and stuff like that in our first due. They kind of shared it amongst ourselves. There was a stand-up meeting in the hallway where the chief said, "Hey, I hear you, but tough. Like, it's coming to your house because that's what I want. If it doesn't work, we'll change it in a year or two." Personally, and now 6 years removed from this, I think I would have played a little bit more chess than checkers in this situation. But I was like, "No, that's not going to fly." And I went to a friend that at the time was running for mayor, talked to him about it, got connected with city council. And within about a 48-hour period, city council said, "No, that engine's not going to that house." And the chief had no idea who did that. And so he opened an internal investigation. Just the way shifts fell, I was the second from last firefighter to get interviewed. I did that really on my own accord. It wasn't an entire shift thing that, hey, we're going to go blast the chief. And so everyone is sitting down with, at the time, it was Lieutenant Winningham that's running this internal investigation. He's asking them who did it. No one knew. I finally sit down with him and he's like, "Do you know why you're in here?" I said, "I have a pretty good idea." He said, "Oh, really? Why?" And I'm like, "Well, because of this email." And just quickly shared with him that you can fire me for many things. Lying will not be one of them. And I did this. Here's why I did it. And the chief terminated me for sharing information with the public and breaking the chain of command. I ultimately appealed that and was allowed to resign instead of be terminated. And given the opportunity to go back, I simply said that I didn't want to work for the fire chief that terminated me. But that ended my experience at the city of Spartanburg just shy of 18 months. Again, looking back at it now, realizing how fortunate the city of Spartanburg is, there are days that I wish I would have done things differently, not because I prevented the engine from going there, I got terminated, but because now on this side of it, I realize how fortunate I was in the situation, the firehouse, and the guys that I was working with. And so, like, I've struggled with that, and that now a lot of those really good people that I've talked about that in 2017 and 18 were firefighters and engineers and newly appointed lieutenants, and they're now battalion chiefs and captains and lieutenants, and they're making real changes in this department where, again, it's not perfect and they're still having their struggles with different things. But man, did I not realize what I had in the moment. And going back to that, pulling the pin on a grenade and throwing it and letting everything blow up, like that's what I did. And we ultimately stopped something. But now that experience in itself is why I can tell people, hey, if you want to affect change in the fire service, there's two ways you do it. You either blow shit up and accept the responsibility, which may mean you get terminated. It may mean that, hey, I'm not going to take this vaccine, so I'm out. I'm gone. I can't find another job. It may mean that, hey, you're blackballed. You're not getting hired in the state anymore. Or, but you affect real change. Like for me, it was the fact that I later went back and photographed the same chief pushing in one of Pierce's shortest engines ever built into the station that I was fired from. And so relationships at City of Spartanburg are still great, but it was super cool to see that, hey, they did not get that big ass apparatus in this firehouse. And they were actually able to design and spec a true, quote, war wagon that is assigned there now and serving the first due. Like, I am proud of that. But the other hand of it is, if everyone did what I did, man, we wouldn't have firehouses with good people. It would be run by yes men that are doing things short-sighted and crazy and not for the best interest of their communities. And because you have guys that are like, "Man, I don't know if I would have done that, Chance. Like, Maybe we should have just dealt with that engine for 2 years, proven it wouldn't have worked, and done it this way. Maybe we should have had two or three more meetings with the chief to explain our perspective and change his mind that way, to your point, give and take. Because you have those guys too, now the training culture of City of Spartanburg is better than it was when I was there. Because I went to one of five fire stations and had the experience that I did, which even in our own department was pretty unique. Now you have three or four firehouses with those same people that got my experience that understand the value of bringing on a young guy, teaching him, answering questions, doing the same thing. And so it is this all that verbal vomit to say, I made a short-sighted decision, pulled the pin on a grenade, got a fire engine blocked from coming to our house. But man, I learned a lot in it. And everyone says we would never do anything different. I probably would have done a couple things different out of selfish ambition to keep riding on an engine every day. But here we are. So I'm going to control what I can control and make the most of it.
A lot to process there, but in my eyes, if I was, which I'm not, but if I was one of those guys at that station, like to me, in my eyes, you would be looked at as a martyr. Like you took one big one for the team to prove a point. Yes, there are ways that you could have went about it. But I also look at it as if I was a fire chief, like you sometimes might want to listen to the guys and girls on the line. Like they're the ones who ride that apparatus. They know the area. So if a majority, and it's always different. If you have one or two people out of three shifts that gripe, eh. But if all three shifts unite, and I don't know if most fire chiefs know, that's very hard to do to get all three shifts to unite on a decision. If they say, hey, this won't work, you might need to backpedal and look at it. But then it also goes back to that mentality of do as I say, I have bugles. And I think in 2024, that way's not flying anymore. Yes, you still have chiefs that are running their departments like that. But proof in the pudding would be, what's your retention rate? How many people have left your department? What does your department look like now? How do they operate when it comes to training? How do they operate on the fire ground? So like that was huge, man, especially that young. Like, man, I can see if you were like a 10, 15, 20 year vet, but like less than a year, you're like, nah, that's not cool.
And that was so full transparency. I've always done marketing, and Justin Flagg, he put it in a way in that podcast I listened to earlier where it kind of resonated with me. And it's martyr, that's a strong word,
It
but
is, but that's, I mean, like, I'm like, I mean, you took one for the team, bro. Like, seriously.
I think that's where everybody on the team is in different positions too. And so there are other guys that I worked with that would have done the exact same thing if they weren't 3 years from retirement, if this wasn't their sole income. And because I've always done marketing and I had a separate business, I made more money off the job than I did on the job. And so the fire service at 32 and 33 years old was literally a bucket list item coming true. And when Justin said he wasn't into the job, he was on the job. Man, if I were to be completely transparent, that was me. And because I would come in and I'd be on shift and I loved it. And when I was there, I was there. But on my 48s, I was managing a business, I was doing other things. I wasn't going to one bad tour in Orlando and doing different trainings and working out with guys. And so it was a easier decision for me to say, hey, I can do this and suffer whatever consequences come because I'm not going to have to ask myself, how do I pay rent next month? I'm not going to potentially lose 30 or 40% of retirement at 3 or 4 years short of retiring because I'm not going to get promoted now. And just based on the way the numbers work, I'm going to make less money in retirement. And so I don't think I really did anything that the other guys that I worked with, if they were in the same position as me, wouldn't have done. And ultimately, we had talked about the rig. We had all agreed that it was too big. Even the ladder placements on it and stuff, there was a lot of stuff that it was not a firefighting engine. It was a hazmat engine with firefighting capabilities. And so, as a man of faith and something that talking to my wife about it, there was a legitimate concern that if we run a call at 2 a.m., first due, and we can't get down a street, I'm going to struggle with that. Because if we're 2, 3 minutes away and someone died because we couldn't get there, and I didn't stand up and voice this concern, man, I would end up struggling with that, especially not having anything to lose other than my job. And I think the other guys would have struggled with that too, but they're also taking themselves into consideration, their families, their businesses. So it was a unique decision, but one that it cost me my enjoyment. It cost me my ability to ride on a fire engine every 3 days and help the community. It didn't cost me my livelihood and what I've built 10 or 15 years doing. So there's a unique perspective there that, to your point, and I still like, I'll go have dinner with those guys today. They won't let me pay for dinner. They won't let me buy drinks. Like, there's a respect amongst all of us, and I love them. But I don't think I'm better than any of them for what I did. That's what I'm
No,
trying to say.
I 100%, I 100% understand you, get you, and understand exactly what you're saying. But I think also to a point, I think every firefighter has a line that can't be crossed. Like as the term is being coined right now, like everybody stands on their business. Like if there's something that you truly believe is not right, you take it however you want, and you take whatever consequences occur with that. Like we you put us, and when I mean you, fire chiefs put us in a position they want us to do good for the community. Well, if you truly want that to happen, let and like I said, don't take this out of context, to a point. Let the men and women decide on certain things because, like I said before, we ride these trucks. Yeah, you sign the check to purchase it, but we're riding the truck. Let us configure how we want to configure the truck. Like I said, there's everything's to a point. I'm not saying, hey, we want to put we want to get a mud flap that says badass on the back of our apparatus. Yeah, in the public's eyes, no. So like I said, there's context to everything. But let the firemen have input when it comes to how we want certain things, how we want to train, things of that nature. That's when you allow that to happen, it's what makes fire departments thrive, especially in a day and age where social media is big. And like you said earlier, no department's perfect, but there are departments out there doing really good things that other departments and administration can take notes on.
Absolutely. And I think because of the world that we live in today, it is easier and easier to find those people. And you're not giving a keynote at FDIC right now if you are the chief that, hey, because I said so.
Right.
You're giving a keynote because an entire room of firemen and women are going to stand up and applaud you for your efforts to do the things that you're doing. And so I think that that is where again, and I'll keep using the example of control the narrative and the tide is changing. Man, if you zoom out and you use the tools at our disposal, social media, things like this, to see what's being said, eventually the idea of, well, man, it's just hard to recruit firefighters today and retain them. Well, I just heard of some chief in Texas that has like a 96%
96%.
retention rate.
Yeah.
Like, hey, that's not something that we can't just keep passing the blame to someone else. Now it is, and I'll use Chief Thompson as a prime example right now of, hey man, we're losing guys because of medical. And I've never talked to Chief Thompson. This is kind of paraphrasing and from my perspective. But hey, we're losing guys because of medical stuff. Well, let's create a paramedic program and put guys in the firehouse that are only going to ride on ambulances, and just be very honest with them and not making this ambulance thing something that you have to do before you can be a fireman. Let's just find people that want to be paramedics and allow them to be paramedics so that we can allow firemen to be firemen. No, that's never been done before. We're not going to do that. No, now there's an example of it. And kind of like the way law works, the more that we learn about these things, the more that revolutionaries stand up and start coining these things and not just identifying problems, but solving them. Man, 3, 4, 5 years from now, it's going to be awesome whenever someone comes to their chief in small town USA and says, "Hey, man, we're losing people left and right because medical's burning them out." All right, cool. There's nothing we can do about it. Well, now the narrative's going to be, "Hey, we're losing people left and right because of medical. Have you heard what this chief in Texas has done?" No, I haven't. All right, well, here's the case study. Here's the example. Here's the retention rates. Can we try this? And the same thing's happening, especially in South Carolina right now, 4896. 5 years ago, 4896 was this, kind of heard a couple other people doing it. Not gonna, well, hey, instead of let's sit down and share our opinions, hey, here's some numbers. Here's some statistics. Here's some proof, benefits, case analysis, like all this homework. Chief, can we consider this? Yeah, let's do a study on it. Let's do a test. Let's do a trial run. They do a trial run. Hey, it worked out better for everybody. Let's implement 4896 now. And so I'm very excited that with all of the things coming to light, again, there's no one size fits all solution, but it's becoming more and more available, the both successes and failures of other people trying things. Because this, and not wishing that this happens, but it could be that 36 months from now, we find out the full-time paramedic in a firehouse position doesn't work. So instead of someone else having to repeat that, we've learned from a failure and we don't have to implement it. Or we look at successes and we can implement it and make it better. So it's, yeah, man, the fire service is in such a unique spot right now.
Well said. And I like to reiterate, 96%.
Retention rate.
That is
Retention rate.
wild in retention. Yes. In a world where, I mean, you have neighboring fire departments, it's like who can pay more? Oh, this fire department goes up $3,000. All right, a couple people go there. All right, we're gonna bump ours, we're gonna pay an extra $3,000 and make it $6,000 more. It's Peter, what's that term? Peter Robin Paul,
Peter
whatever the heck.
Paypal.
Right. That, like, it's what's going on. But I think pay is great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, money, I mean, I'm not a fool. I know everything revolves around money, but it's not always about the money. It's gonna be about the culture. If a department will truly allow firemen to be firemen, to be aggressive firemen, safe firemen, not, and when I say aggressive, not meaning we're on suicidal missions that we just want to go in. And I've said this before, and I hope other chiefs, I don't know if I have chiefs listening, but firemen don't wake up in the morning wanting, telling themselves, hey, when I leave my house this morning, I want this to be the last time I leave it. No, we want to do a job, and sometimes that job means the ultimate sacrifice. And I understand no fire chief wants to go through a line of duty death. But in a field where you can't tie safety upon safety upon safety, SOG upon SOG upon policy, nothing's black and white. Everything is gray. And there's a point where you have to just let, through training and continuous training, you have to let firefighters be firefighters.
Absolutely. And that's where Chief Rhodes, if anyone hasn't listened to his FDIC speech or Chief Thompson, they're great examples of exactly what you're explaining. Other people have tried to distort and manipulate the term cowboy in the fire service and what it means and how reckless it is. And it's like, well, actually, no. If you go back and look at just the history of the term cowboy, man, it's showing up every day, doing repetitive things, the same thing, bettering your farm, looking out for your animals. Like, it's actually kind of a term of endearment to be called a cowboy. And even Chief Rhodes talking about revolutionaries, like, there's a proper way to do this and talk about things. And I feel like there was kind of a short time in history where those with the biggest platforms and the loudest voices were able to make those people look silly. Oh, well, this cowboy over here died in the line of duty today. We don't need any more cowboys. Well, no, they actually died doing what they love because of an unfortunate situation. It was an accident. That's what they signed up to do. But they didn't die because they were being reckless. It wasn't something silly. And so there is this unique spot where more and more people are being allowed to be firemen. And to your point, money is important. We have to pay bills. We have to be able to grow. I know guys leaving certain departments right now that I necessarily wouldn't leave because money's an issue in their family and they have five kids and like it's a lot. And so I will never look down on someone for changing departments because of money. Like money is an issue. And I think that was one thing that was taken out of context in mine and Jeremy's conversation on National Fire Radio was, hey, money is important, but it's not everything now. And I know a firefighter here in South Carolina that left a good department making good money to go to another department making less money, but where he's allowed to be a firefighter a little bit more than his old department. There's more calls at this new department. And within less than 90 days of being at this new department, he makes a grab the other day. And so it's a prime example of firefighters sign up to do this because they have a call to serve. And when we're allowed to serve, take out all the other crazy acronyms and VEIS and RIT and fire truck engine, all this other stuff. Every firefighter that I've talked to that is into the job is there to be a public servant. And that is what they want to do. And when they're allowed to do that, they're not working out in gear to try to become a calendar fitness model. Like there's other routes to do that much easier. They're working out in gear because they want to be best equipped to serve when that time comes. There are PIOs that are very passionate about public communication and reading to students and all these other things because they were called to serve. It's not that they want to be the most famous person on some campus somewhere. And so I think when we can really frame things and coming back to that conversation between chiefs and firemen and stuff like that, if we were all just to get rid of all the BS, all the filters, and say, all right, Danny, I hear you. How does this serve the community? Oh, you know what? I didn't think about it that way. Like, let's do that training initiative. Hey, you want to be on the firefighter challenge team and travel the country doing the firefighter challenge, but you want us to pay for it? Man, that doesn't make sense to me. How does that serve our community? Oh, you're going to be in better shape. It might help us with recruitment. We might get more firefighters that never knew about Spartanburg because now you're traveling the country letting them know about Spartanburg. Hey, now that I see it from that perspective, it does serve the community. Let's do that. And so, if we just get rid of personal opinions and really just ask, man, how does this serve the people who expect us to serve them? Hey, that starts to change the narrative.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Personal question. You went back to take pictures of that apparatus. Did that fire chief like see you? Did you have any
Oh, absolutely. He
discussions?
smiled for the camera. I got a picture of him standing in front of the engine with the guys. And so that was a moment where, man, it's just my personal beliefs kind of echoing this with a personal question. I'm not one to hold on to bitterness and the grudges and stuff like that. And especially now, 6 years removed, the chief in the moment, his pride was challenged. His feelings were hurt. I don't know that I wouldn't have gotten mad and fired someone if I were in his position. And so I think it's so easy for us to, again, drop anchors and harbor feelings and stuff like that. But that doesn't help any of us grow. And I think it's one of those situations that to go back, be able to shake that chief's hand, take a picture of him in front of the apparatus, even being invited to come do that. It says a lot about that give and take of, hey man, I know you fired me. Like, I don't agree with it. I'm going to challenge you and call you on all the BS and the appeal, and we're going to fight. Like, it's a ring. Like, we're going to go back and forth. But after the fight, we can hug it out. Like, at the end of the day, you're way more experienced in this world than I am. You've done it for longer than I have. So there is a respect here where I'm like, man, I don't agree with you, but I can respect you. I don't agree with you, but I can shake your hand. I don't agree with you, but it's going to serve the community to see these firefighters pushing in a new apparatus that their tax dollars paid for, the excitement behind it, the community at the wet down ceremony. Like, I'm absolutely going to come photograph that. So, though it was a, I don't want to say awkward moment, a unique moment to photograph the chief that fired me smiling in front of the engine. It's, yeah, it's full circle, man. And that's why I encourage every young firefighter, especially, like, if you're going to blow up bridges, realize that the people on the other side of that river or whatever it is, they're probably going to build another bridge and you're probably going to come face to face with them again. And don't ever think that we live in a world where you can disrespect, hurt, harm someone, and just be completely free of those consequences. Like, ultimately, everything, whether it's us not training for calls and failing a community citizen, or talking trash behind someone that we work with behind their back, and thinking that that's what's going to make us popular in the room that we're currently in, like, all that stuff ultimately is going to be something that we have to face. And to anyone listening to this, like, if we're going to be a student of the game, and if there was one lesson of everything that we've talked about in this that I can really encourage someone with, it's, man, you're going to be held accountable to all your actions. And don't be a chameleon, a chameleon, and walk into a pub or a firehouse or a conference and talk trash about people, because that does not advance the fire service. That does not make you look better. That does not help your department. Like, you can have disagreements with people, but it comes down to that maturity thing of, like, hey, man, yeah, Spartanburg's great. And this podcast will be one of the first times that many people find out that I was ever fired from the city of Spartanburg, because it's not what I lead with. It's not like, oh, yeah, I was a firefighter, and then I got fired by this douchebag that da da da. No, that's not it. And that would probably close more doors for me than open them, because chiefs would be like, oh, wait, you were fired by a chief? Maybe there's something here that we don't want to invite you to take photos. And so, to anybody out there, young or old, like, if you're old and you've been doing this, let's stop it. If you're young and you haven't started, don't start. But, man, negative Nancy's not invited. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And there is a time where you don't have to act like everything's perfect. There are all of us that we need those two or three people where we can sit down and be like, man, Danny hurt my feelings today. Like, he said that I was a horrible firefighter. Like, that bothers me. Have those two or three people that you can vet conversations with, share real struggles with, and they're not going to judge you. They're going to challenge you. They're going to help you walk through things. But don't be the guy that shows up and talks bad about everybody else.
And I think that's the perfect way to end this interview, this conversation. I will add though, if we had people that had that kind of mindset, the fire service would be so much more ahead of its time. We wouldn't have the issues that we're having, and we would have more departments like the Colony, more chiefs like Chief Scott Thompson. Because they put aside, there's a time you have to put aside ego and feelings for the greater good. Even if it's not your idea, embrace it and pass it on. So I just want to say,
Good
Chance, man,
word.
thank you. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day and schedule to talk shop, man. It was
I
great.
appreciate the opportunity, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.